Well, let's welcome you back to This Week in the Association. I am Rob Pannier from the Minor League Sports Report, joined once again by my good buddy Kevin Lucco from the 10th Inning Stretch. And this week we have the honor of the voice of the Sioux City Explorers joining us, Connor Ryan. Connor, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Glad to be on. First time, long time. Happy to be on here. You guys do a fantastic job of covering this league, and it's always entertaining whatever you guys put out, whether it's print, you know, podcast, CDs. I listen to Mountain Talk with Steve Montgomery a lot, but mostly just so I can rip on him later for half of his answers.
It is quite the interesting show he has. I'd say he's probably the most candid of the guys that Rob does the shows with.
Well, I want to say, Connor, before we dive into anything in particular, is that you've got to listen to about 18 months of him bash your Patriots, Tom Brady, Nebraska football. So I'm going to kind of open up the forum and just kind of let you air grievances, if you'd like to start with that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand what his problem is. I mean, you would think for a guy that's won 70 games now twice, you know, in this league, the only manager to do it now twice, he would have a respect for, you know, people that win in greatness, but he doesn't. It's incredible. Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback of all time. There's no doubt about it anymore. 6 rings. He's been to, like, 9 Super Bowls. And, I mean, me and Steve Montgomery have gone back and forth. It's probably in total, like, a year of our time wasted of debating Tom Brady and Patriots football, because Mongo's whole thing is he thinks that all the Patriots do is get these little receivers that are intelligent, tell them to run 5 yards downfield, Brady's going to put it right in between your numbers, and then just run another 5 yards, dive forward for a first down. And of course, oh, Tom Brady gets credited for 12 yards right there. Oh, he's the greatest of all time. And it's like, no, Steve, there's so much more that goes into that. If it was that easy, everybody would do it. If it was that easy, no, Patrick Mahomes wouldn't be in the league for throwing the ball 70 yards. Like, if it was that easy, I would be able to do it. So I don't understand what his problem is there. I really think it all just maybe possibly stems from, you know, the fact that he's a guy that just likes to get on people anyways. You know, it's a chance to get on me for that and attack Tom Brady, attack the Patriots, and, you know, get under my skin a little bit. And then the rest of Boston sports just, you know, tails from that, because I really don't know what his problem is, but I've never seen him have a bigger smile on his face. Then I think it was the night we played the Lincoln Celtics, and it was game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals between the Boston Bruins and the St. Louis Blues. And I wore my Boston Bruins jersey there to the ballpark that day. I had the game in the stream lined up on my laptop. I'll be honest, I probably watched a hockey game a lot more than I did the baseball game that night. And I walked into the clubhouse after the game to deliver box scores. I walk in his office, and of course, you know, the Blues win, and I'm, you know, moping around, and he sees me walking, and sees the jersey, and, you know, I think we lost that night. And all of a sudden, he didn't care, because he just had a huge grin on his face. He's like, what's wrong, buddy? What's wrong? Oh, your team didn't win, huh? So, I mean, that's all he gets. He gets the satisfaction out of watching, you know, me and my Boston sports teams lose. And like I said, we go around and around and around, because it's almost one of those things where all of a sudden when Brady and the Patriots get brought up in the clubhouse in his office, everyone else like rolls their eyes and groans and leaves, because they know it's going to be a 30-minute battle between me and him about Patriot football. And then as for Nebraska, I mean, I think he's scared, to be honest with you. It's one of those things, a self-defense mechanism, where I think he's, to be honest, just scared of what Nebraska football under Scott Frost is going to become. I think he knows that his Ohio State Buckeyes days are numbered at the top of the Big Ten. So it's one of those things where he's trying to put on a brave face, but deep down it's, you know, keeping him awake at night. He's just scared at the ceiling going, oh, man, this is going to suck when they all of a sudden take over the Big Ten from us. So,
you mean the Ohio State Buckeyes?
It's Ohio State. Just Ohio. I don't want to
yeah.
I mean, come on, how?
I think that's retarded.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, talk about arrogance. I mean, why is the next school do that? The Minnesota Gophers. No.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm surprised that he's not going around telling people that, you know, hey, we are the Sioux City Explorers. It's ingraining him in that much. I mean, I understand he grew up in Ohio and everything, but I mean, he lived in North Dakota for how long and now in Florida? So, yeah. And when it comes to Steve Montgomery, here's the thing you need to know about him. If he's forgotten more baseball than I will ever know, you know, he knows so much more about the game of baseball than I ever will. He tells me, Connor, there should actually be four outs in an inning. I'm saying, okay, sounds good. I'm a sponge when it comes to him dropping any sort of baseball knowledge on me, but when it comes to any other sport, I mean, just let it go in one ear and out the other, because I know on that Mound Talk show, there's somebody that always asks him, like, every time, about the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Oh, Tyler.
From Florida.
Yeah, Tyler.
I want to reach out to the poor guy and be like, he doesn't know anything about the Tampa Bay Lightning. Montgomery knows nothing about hockey. He couldn't even tell you who the top goal scorer this year is. If I said Steven Stamkos, he'd probably look at me and say, who the heck is that? Is that a double-A righty arm that I can get on my team? But, yeah, when it comes to any other sport, don't listen to Montgomery. But when it comes to baseball, I'll give him some credit. He kind of knows what he's talking about.
So you're saying he needs to stay in his lane.
Yeah, exactly. I told him that before. But again, it's Steve Montgomery, and it for him, that was one and not the other.
You know, Connor, he did tell me something interesting. I learned that you're kind of an amateur food eating competition guy.
A little bit. Geez, that started last year. We were in, where were we? Kansas City. Or no, Grand Prairie. And there's a Jack in the Box across the street from the hotel. And our pitching coach, Bobby Post, huge Jack in the Box fan. He grew up in California, so he loves Jack in the Box. And he could, like, take down those tacos no problem. And he goes up and he orders 8 right off the bat. So Mago was telling me, hey, the next day, we're going to In-N-Out, and we started talking about their secret menu. And he's like, how many of these could you eat? And I'm like, oh, I've never had In-N-Out. I always wanted to try it. I could put down quite a few. And so we're coming up with these different ideas, and all of a sudden I was like, you know what? I was like, Bobby, I'll challenge you for an assortment of money that I'm not going to disclose. How many tacos you eat here tonight, I will take that down in In-N-Out patties, you know, tomorrow. Because we had like a day game, so we're going to hit In-N-Out at like 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon and then go to Cleburne after that. And Bobby's like, all right, you're on. So he already had 8, goes up and gets 4 more. He's like, he eats 12 tacos. He's like, oh, man. He's like, I don't know if I can chew anymore. He's like, that's a lot. And Mongo, of course, is like, dude, there's no way Connor's beating that. That's 12 patties, no shot. So we go to In-N-Out the next day, and I walk up to the counter and look at the person at the counter just said, this might sound weird, but I need 12 patties. I don't know how big you can make the burgers, but I need 12 patties. They're just like, we could do 3 4x4s, and like, sounds good to me. So it's 3 burgers of 4 patties, and I took it down. I ate it. And then the most impressive part was for 12 patties, I think it took me about 13 to 15 minutes to do it. So I did that. They're all sitting there just like, oh, my God. So we go back again this year, and, you know, Mongo's like, you got to do it again. And I was like, all right, I'll do it. And I was like, if only Bobby gets in on it again. I was like, I'll do a reverse bet for him because we're hitting Kansas City next, and Kansas City has a Jack in the Box. And I said, if he, you know, I'll set the pace in patties, he does it in tacos. So Bobby's like, all right, sounds good to me. So I try to up it, and I go 16 patties to start things off. And I got through the first 3, so I hit my limit from the year before, and I bait my time. I did it in like 10 minutes, took down 12 patties. And then hitting the fourth one, because I was like, I'm good. And I had about 3 bites in the fourth one, and I hit a wall. I just couldn't go anymore. And I took down half of it. And then Bobby had, there was a Jack in the Box where we stopped near the In-N-Out. So Bobby's like, I'm going to go take BP real quick at Jack in the Box. So he comes back, slaps a receipt down on the table. It's 10 tacos. And he's like, they went down easy. I'm like, okay. So he gives me half the burger. He gives me another 2 patties. So I did like 14. And he's like, all right, so I got to do 14 tacos. I'm like, yep. So they went to go walk around the mall. I went back on the bus and just laid down because I was dying. And then Bobby comes back on the bus and just goes, Connor, I'm like, yeah. He's like, I'm out. I don't feel good. So I won by default there. Bobby did 10 tacos, couldn't do it. I raised my PR to 14 patties at In-N-Out, and, you know, I felt great. I felt fine. The rest of the day, all the rest of the players are coming up to me and saying, like, dude, are you okay? Like, that was a lot. I'm like, yeah, I'm doing good now. So, of course, they're professional athletes. They always worry about what they put in their body, how much they put in their body. I'm sitting there eating, and they're doing the math. It's like, all right, that's how much sodium, how many calories, how many this, how many pounds of grams of fat, how much. And I'm just like, guys, I don't care. It's delicious. So that's my adventure, I guess, into amateur, food eating, food competitions.
Well, you know, Brad Aller would say none of that counts because he didn't go to Whataburger.
Oh, I've had my discussions with Brad about Whataburger. They've never been ones that Brad enjoys. Let's just say that. He called me out publicly about it. I went on one of their episodes of Rail Talk when we were down in Cleburne, and it was like right. It was right when Whataburger sold to the Chicago chain, and me and Denny, Garrett, we both agreed Whataburger's just not that good. It's if you've had Burger King, you've had Whataburger. So, and again, I hope Brad listens to this because I'll say that until the day I die.
Oh, he listens to us. He listens in really close when we do the power rankings.
Well, good. Because guess what? The power rankings of burgers, Whataburger is not in the top 10.
Hey, that's an idea. One of these weeks, we'll just, instead of doing team, we'll just do burgers.
There you go. Yeah. You know, Connor, I also want to say, I heard that your computer had quite the week there at a game.
Yeah, it did. First time ever got a foul ball in my press box, which prompted a story actually about you, Rob, during a broadcast. Now, I will say, and I'm probably going to say that I did not break concentration one bit. A weaker man might have bailed out of there and, you know, gotten out of that scene, but I sat there and watched the foul ball just drop straight down. Luckily, my computer survived. It's in great shape, but yeah, I called the whole thing flawlessly, and, you know, there's a guy sitting next to me, one of our people in our video department. He was sitting in a chair next to me since I'm a one-man crew, and he slid his chair way back as soon as he saw that one starting to come down. So I'm just saying, I handled it like a man and took the foul ball in the press box, but it reminded me of the time, the first game I went to at Lawrence Dumont Stadium last year, and Rob came in to help me with that godforsaken window that was there in the press box in the visitor's radio booth in Wichita. And we got it open. I was like, all right, thank you, Rob. And he's like, yeah. And he goes, you see these holes behind you, right? And I'm like, okay, yeah, I see them. And he's like, okay, those are foul balls. So if one comes at you, don't try to catch it. I'm like, okay, duly noted. And I learned that because there was a foul ball that hit right above me in that press box. I'm like, oh, my God, yeah, I'm not going to try to catch one of those because they come screaming at you there. So I'm glad that the foul ball came to me in Sioux City, where the only way it would come to me was just a kind of a soft pop-up, so it didn't really hit my computer all that hard. But in Wichita, yeah, my computer is obliterated.
Yeah, that happened to Denning, as a matter of fact. If you could ask about it, his computer got smashed a couple of years ago when a line drop, I think off of, it was, I can't remember who was batting, but line drive right off of his computer just smashed the screen. Like, wow. Pretty crazy.
You know, that was the first thing I checked. I opened up my computer. I'm like, oh, gosh, there's going to be a crack. There's going to be like a circle the size of a baseball, like black in the middle of my screen. Nope, worked just fine. So, hey, I'll take it.
What a promotion for what kind of computer do you have? Because you could all of a sudden become a great pitch man for them.
Yeah, it's a Mac, so if Apple wants to send me any money to advertise strong computers, that's perfectly fine with me.
Yeah, you know, they should have like a line of baseball-proof computers.
Exactly,
yeah, we could make some cases for broadcasters because I think everybody would completely understand that. You know, hey, does your computer get destroyed by a foul ball? I already know who my first customer is, apparently Denny.
Exactly right. That would be exactly right.
You know, I did a tour of Miller Park a few summers ago, and the press box, open press box area, it's just right in the line for foul balls. And what they did, wherever there's a hole or a dent, they circled it with the marker, wrote down who hit the ball. So you toured, and it was like all these circles, all these holes in the press box wall. So, yeah, those come up there with some pretty good smoke behind them, that's for sure.
Yeah, you got to be really guarded about that kind of stuff. Like, you know, what can you do, though? Well, Connor, let's talk a little bit about kind of how you got yourself started in the broadcasting and how you got interested in the Sioux City job.
Yeah, so I was always a kid in the front yard when I played wiffle ball by myself, or if I was shooting baskets by myself, that, you know, I would just broadcast the game to myself. So I always had a knack for it. I always loved doing it. And never really thought of it as an actual job up until I got to college. And I went to Wayne State College in Wayne, Nebraska, a little small college, and not to be confused, the Wayne University and either, I can't remember if it's Indiana or Michigan, one of those two. But it was a little small college. I had learned they had a campus radio station, and they did sports on it, and they had a sports talk show, and one of the guys that the sports director at the college was one of my good friends, and I was like, wait a minute. I was like, can I hop on your sports show every once in a while? He goes, yeah, do it. Like, we'd have fun. So I did that, and then he asked me if I'd do color for a basketball game once, and then he graduated. I took over, so I got started in that, and then I put, you know, resumes out there, trying to find an internship, trying to stick around Northeast Nebraska as much as I could, and got the job with the Explorers as the promotions intern. I actually didn't do any radio broadcasting at all as an intern, and then I got the director of ticketing job the year, like right after my internship, and I did that for a couple of years, and then it wasn't until 2017 when Dave Nitz was having some personal things going on in his life, and our team president, Matt Adamski, said, you know, what if we put Connor in the booth with you for a few nights, for a few innings, just to, you know, see if that works for us and see if, you know, get his feet wet. That way, if you have to take off, Dave, you know, go for it. And Dave's like, that's fine with me. So I did the middle three innings, and I guess I impressed Dave Nitz enough that he was like, if you want to do this every night at, you know, the home games, go for it. So, you know, I did that. I'm not sure if maybe I impressed Dave enough, or if he just realized, hey, this could be a food and bathroom break for me, because, you know, 90 seconds you're on it, you're not even able to do that in between innings. So I think he realized, like, oh, I could walk away for a couple of innings and do what I have to do and come back and finish up the game. And he always gave me a tough time, because he would leave and we'd be up 4-0, and when he got back on the air, we'd be down like 6-4. So he's like, oh, way to blow the lead on me. And so he's like, I'll go get it back, don't worry. But I helped out Dave, and then he retired from the Explorers gig. He still does everything for Louisiana Tech. He's the voice of the Bulldogs, football, basketball, baseball, everything. He does a great job down there. And we still talk to each other quite a bit. He talks to me all the time. He called me the other day, and we just talk about whatever. He keeps track of the team a lot. He listens to me as much as he can, and usually run into him in Texas, but and then Dave retired, so I threw my name in the ring for that job again, and you know, the Explorers are gracious enough to give it to me, and so I've been there in the full-time voice, the one-man show, for last season, which of course we won 71 games, and you know, I was like, hey, this is easy. And then of course now this year, where it's not as easy.
You know, when Dave was doing games up here for Sioux City at CHS Field, normally a guy doesn't like it when you hit a rain delay, but up here when it was rain delay and Sioux City's in town, it turned into Dave Nitz Story Hour, and I just had a blast just listening to him tell stories about all the travels he's had throughout his minor league career. Just a super guy.
Oh, I mean, he's been everywhere. Mongo and Bobby Post always joked with him. They're like, hey, did you ever see that picture of Babe Ruth calling a shot? And someone, you know, if someone random and be like, yeah, and they're like, did you see that little boy, like, in the front row of the stands? They're like, I guess. And they're like, yeah, that was Dave. I mean, they gave him so much stuff about it. If they had a question about a rule, they'd be like, I don't know, ask Dave. He was there when they wrote the rules about baseball. So, yeah, but they, I mean, all jokes aside, Dave had so many good stories. I remember going along with him on a road trip to Sioux Falls for a doubleheader. And, yeah, you're right, Kevin. It was just story hour for the hour drive up there. We did the game, and on the way back, it was just another story hour of, you know, oh, yeah, I remember this big leaguer. I remember interviewing this guy. This guy wasn't very nice to me. This guy's a heck of a guy. He still gives me a Christmas card every year. You know, he told me a story where he had a chance to become the voice of Syracuse men's basketball.
Wow.
In the 80s, right when they had moved to the Carrier Dome. Boeheim was there. They had just recruited Pearl Washington. And he turned it down because the radio station that did Syracuse men's basketball did not cover the AAA team that's up in Syracuse. And he was like, sorry, I want to do baseball. So he didn't take it. So it's crazy to think how Dave Nitz could be way more household name than he jumped at that gig. But he loves baseball so much that he'll admit that. He's like, baseball, he's like, I could be probably, yes, very much farther in my career, but baseball, he's like, that's my love. That's what I want to do. And so, you know, he's like, it's probably gotten me in trouble a few times. Oh, well, I love it too much. So, yeah, Dave's the story time with Dave is a lot of fun.
Well, let's talk about your Sioux City Explorers there for a moment because, you know, kind of been an inconsistent season for them so far. And so tell us a little bit about what your thoughts are on the team and what you've seen so far.
Well, they had a tough start to the season. You know, I don't know what much of it was. Steve Montgomery, whenever I talked to him, kind of pointed to complacency, and maybe that's what it was. Is you brought back so many big-time names from last year's 71-win club that they felt they could just roll the balls out there and, you know, they'd eventually win. And, you know, maybe they didn't realize it, but after you win 71 games and after you've made the playoffs now for three out of the last 4 years, that you're no longer the little brother Sioux City Explorers anymore. Now when you roll into town, teams are saying this is, you know, it's like when the Saints come to town. They're, you know, it's a big name and you want to beat them. And I think that's what happened to them at the beginning of the year. Just some rust needed to be shaken off. You know, our starting rotation struggled outside of Jason Garcia. And then all of a sudden things clicked and the bats started waking up again. We got big two-out hits. And the biggest part was the rotation just started mowing people down. Garcia was still on his roll, which obviously helped him get picked up by Tampa Bay. Taylor Jordan for four straight starts was untouchable. Eric Karch had figured out how to, you know, mold himself into a reliever, into a starter. Max Duval would, you know, go out there and give us six quality innings, five to six quality innings, and you saw the wind start to pick up, and then, of course, the bullpen's been fantastic all year. I mean, last night, obviously, things didn't go your way, but that's going to happen over a course of a 100-game season. You're going to blow a few games here and there out of the pen, but they had an ERA under 3 going into this series with Chicago, and obviously that's highlighted by three members of the bullpen, Falwell, Gerken, and Poparico, being named to the All-Star team in the South. Even here in the month of July, the bats are still going. They had a little mini slump that first week of July, where they really didn't do it. They were pretty quiet. Our only runs came off of Cole Bunch and like Sebastian Zawad and Jose Sermo. And, but now they're starting to pick up again. But now we're kind of seeing that the starting rotation is taking a slight step back, trying to regain their footing as Taylor Jordan had that heat exhaustion game against Winnipeg and he's still trying to get back into that groove they had early on this season. Eric Karch has been very good. He had a little bit of a hiccup as well, but after his last complete game, it seems like he's good to go again. You know, the addition of Pete Tago is fascinating to me because guy hasn't started since 2013. He's already given the Sioux City Explorers two starts of 6 innings and 100 pitches. And the guy hasn't started for 5-6 years, and he goes out there and, you know, not just 6 innings and 100 pitches of, well, let's just get out there and see what happens. I mean, he was good. You know, the first game against Milwaukee had a few hiccups and led to a loss, but last night he looked absolutely fantastic, and I'm really excited to see, you know, what we have out of Tago. You know, as far as the lineup goes, Nate Sampson is what Nate Sampson does. I say it every night, and you just kind of take him for granted because he just goes out there and he hits about 330 or 340, you know, 5 to 10 home runs, and is always going to be in the top 10 in the league in RBIs and runs scored and steals bases, as the guy just does
everything you could ask for. And it's almost criminal. Like, yes, he is recognized plenty around the league with awards and such, but you almost take it for granted each and every night. He goes out there and goes 2 for 4. He gets like 2-hit games like it's nothing. Half of the season, he has 2-hit games, and it almost gets, you know, kind of put under the radar because he's so good and he's done it for so long. Jose Sermo, he hits home runs in bunches. He went for the first half of the season with no home runs, and everyone was kind of panicking, saying, where are they? And I remember talking to him, and I was like, you're still in the middle of the order. You're still driving in runs. You know, home runs, yes, while they're sexy, you know, it's not the end-all, be-all. And he said, no, I agree. And he's like, for me, he's like, it just comes in bunches. Like, I'll hit, like, 5 in a week and then take another week off and then hit 3 the next one. And I think you're seeing that again where he just goes on an absolute tear, and he'll hit, like, 2 home runs a game, hit, like, 3 or 4 in a series, take the next series off, and he goes right back to it. You know, he's near the top of the league in RBIs, so, you know, Sermo's doing what he does in the middle of the order. And, you know, for a lot of the other guys, I think maybe last year just happened to be maybe a little bit of a career year. We only had one player last year who hit under 300, or like at one point during the season. So it's, I mean, that's, you can kind of look at it and say they had career years. You know, Kyle Wren's been an excellent addition at the top of the lineup with a very good blend of power. And then, of course, Dylan Kelly starts off the season the first 2 weeks hitting under 100, well under 100, like 057, I think, was his low point. And he's already gathered himself back up to about the 285, 290 range and has the second best batting average on our team. So, you know, he's going on his march of a month straight of batting about 350, his Ted Williams month, I like to call it. So, you know, and he's been doing a fantastic job behind the plate and throwing runners out. That had kind of been something that Kelly wasn't known for early on in his career, but then this season he's really all of a sudden turned himself into a real threat behind the plate, and teams, you know, tested him a lot early on the season because I think they still thought he was last year's Dylan Kelly, but he's kind of, you know, they've slowed down a little bit now that they see what Kelly's been able to do behind the plate. So, you know, they lost the tough one last night to Chicago, and that's one of those where it's just going to happen during the season. Every team's going to blow that, you know, non-save situation game in the ninth inning. Hopefully that's just the one this year. You know, we've actually really struggled against the North Division, though I'm sure there's a lot of teams that have. But obviously it's a good thing we're not in the North, and we've been able to kind of take care of our business in the South Division because that's what gets you in the playoffs. So hopefully we can do that here this weekend against Sioux Falls.
Yeah, we kind of seen that in the standings too, that, you know, most of the better records are lined in the North Division, and pretty much, I would say 1 through 5 in the South still have good reason to believe they can make a run for the playoffs. It's going to be a real interesting the last couple months of the year, especially in that South Division.
I mean, I really honestly think it could be just who gets hot in those last couple of weeks makes the run in the South, and if you stay hot, you have a fantastic chance in the playoffs. I mean, how many times do you see that in baseball where it's just, if you get hot that last week or two of the season, it rides into the playoffs and you ride yourself onto a championship. And especially in this league, you know, you see that all the time. So, you know, we're still hanging around, and, you know, Mongo and Bobby are still looking to add pieces. I know they're still looking for a starter to try to fill in a spot because Tyler Falwell's making some starts for us right now, but he's more of a bullpen, multi-inning, long relief type role guy for us. We really missed that last thing when we went to extra innings. That's where you'd see, you know, we had to go with Matt Poberico for 2 straight innings, and he's just not that guy. Tyler Falwell would have been that guy that we could plug in the 10th and say, keep pitching until we win this game in the, you know, bottom half of the inning. So, you know, we're missing that, but I agree. I think it could be just whoever gets hot, and that could be Lincoln. It could be Sioux Falls. I mean, Cleburne could just get hot and run away with it, or Kansas City could, you know, you know how they roll. They could always just add a few pieces, you know, out of nowhere that are big-time names, big-time talent, and, you know, they could make a good run at it.
Yeah, I want to ask you, because this was something that Steve talked about on his show a couple days ago. The nice thing I look at in the South in particular is that, I other than, I think, 3 against St. Paul and 3 against Gary, like 37 of the last 43 games are within your division. So you're going to get to really determine, you know, I mean, you get to stake yourself. I mean, if you don't win the division, it's not because you didn't have the opportunity to do so. So I would assume from a broadcaster standpoint, there's nothing more exciting than knowing you're getting all these great division games.
No, exactly, you know. And I guess maybe the part where I can look at and say, hey, we've struggled against the North is because I have a huge sample size of it. Say, we've literally only won one series this year against the North. We had a chance to do it last night, was unable to do so, but, you know, once we're done with them, I think we have a series against Gary coming up right after the All-Star break, and then we have one against St. Paul in August, and that should be it. I think that's all we have of the North. So, like you said, we've struggled against them, but we've taken care of business when it comes to beating teams in our own division. We still have three games in Cleburne, and they still have to come to us twice. I mean, those are at least nine games that you have against the top team in the division to try to take care of it yourself. Kansas City, we see Kansas City, I believe, 10 times in the last 2 weeks of the season. They come to us for, I think, six, and we go to them for four or something, some sort of variation like that in the last 2 weeks of the season, which could be huge. If, you know, that was now and we're in the same situation where I think right now we're two or two and a half games behind Kansas City and you have 10 games against them at the end of the year, if you don't make the playoffs, all you have to do is look at yourself in the mirror and say, we didn't get it done. But that's a fantastic opportunity to jump right back in and, you know, especially at the end of the year, against the South Division, it seems as though we're going to be playing playoff baseball for the whole month of August.
Yeah, it should be an exciting time. You know, sometimes in August you get like the little series and you just know nothing matters, but I think we're going to be seeing that every week in the last month of the season, that there's going to be a big series going on in the South regardless of where it's at. So, makes it fun.
I mean, that's what kind of happened last year. We clinched the playoff spot about like halfway through the month of August, and then, you know, the last few weeks is kind of like, well, now what do we do? I mean, you know, you want to stay in shape to get ready for the playoffs. You want to have guys get rest, but at the same time, you want to keep your foot on the gas pedal, but also kind of take it off. It was kind of an awkward situation to be in. It's a good situation to be in, obviously, but at the same time, this year it seems like maybe those last few weeks are going to be, you know, every game, every inning, every pitch is going to end up mattering.
Yeah, you look at Kansas City last year, they were pretty much playing playoff baseball for the last two or three weeks of the year. And yeah, it's, you get that team that gets hot to go in the playoffs, and you look at it for two series, you only really need to go 6-4 and you win a championship. So,
right.
You know, I want to ask you, because Kevin and I were talking a little bit about this before the show, and you alluded on this a little bit, but Taylor Jordan, since that complete game victory that he had like three starts ago, really has struggled a little bit. Is this just kind of fatigue, or is there more to that than just that?
He had that heat exhaustion game against Winnipeg where he wasn't able to make it out of the first inning. It was a day much like we've had actually here again today in Sioux City where, you know, today was 95, feels like 110 at the high point of the day. And, you know, it didn't go over well for him. And I completely understand. I don't do well in this humidity either. And sometimes it's all it takes to kind of knock a pitcher out of his groove, you know, especially when he was in such a groove like that where, I mean, he was untouchable for four straight starts. And every time you rolled him out there, it was how many strikeouts is he going to rack up? How many, you know, we could count on one hand how many base runners are going to get on in what, 7, 8, or 9 innings tonight. And, you know, that kind of knocked him out of it. And then they skipped his next start just to be cautious with him, you know, give him a few extra days of rest. And then the next one was a tough one against Sioux Falls at the Birdcage. And it was a start in which, you know, one inning he would mow down the Canaries 1-2-3. And then the next it would start with like a walk. And then all of a sudden the Canaries could like smell blood in the water. A walk, a Laylock with, you know, single to right, a double off the wall. You know, a double down the line here, a strikeout, another walk, and the innings will just kind of build up on him. And then the next inning, back to 1-2-3. But then the next inning, the leadoff guy gets on. The next guy comes up. He ropes a double. The next guy comes up. He walks. Next guy comes up. He hits a base hit. It just kind of, it was back and forth all game long. And then I think the next one was in Fargo, which I had mentioned during the broadcast, and I'm sure it's what you looked at too, Rob, was if you look at the line score as a whole, it's an ugly one. It's 4 2/3 innings or 4 1/3 and 7 runs on like 9 hits. But in that game, he had went the first 4 innings and allowed a single base runner. That was it. That was it. He was absolutely fantastic, and I'm sitting back thinking, Taylor Jordan's back. All right. He had that one, you know, kind of knocked the rust off game against Sioux Falls. Taylor Jordan's back in it. And then the fifth inning, I have no idea what happened. I mean, the wheels just the wheels just completely fell off. I think I said it. The wheels just didn't come off. His car drove over a police bike strip. The wheels blew up. His car flipped over and rolled over 10 times, lit on fire, and blew up. I mean, it was a 10-run fifth inning, and, you know, he gave up a home run to Chris Jacobs to lead off the inning. That's going to happen. Chris Jacobs is a heck of a hitter and an incredible slugger. You know, and he had even been slumping, but all the hits he had in that slump were home runs. He's gonna do that. It's Chris Jacobs. And then a guy got out of the walk. He struck out another one. And I even mentioned, okay, looks like Taylor Jordan, you know, worked through it, just struck out a guy. He's okay. And then Leo Baldopina hits one down the left field line about as short of a home run as you can get. So Wada went up and left to try to rob it, and it tipped off his glove and went over the wall. And you could just see on the mound Taylor Jordan's body language completely changed. It was just like the life had been sucked out of him, you know, and they start giving up base hit, base hit, double, base hit, base hit, double. And I think Mongo could see it by then. He pulled him from the game. But at that point, it was already like 7-2 Fargo. You know, the bullpen wasn't able to do it because, I mean, Fargo does what Fargo does. They pulled big-time innings. They'll, the other day, they played Gary and scored 16 runs. They scored in only 4 innings. It's what they do. And unfortunately for Taylor Jordan, it just kind of happened against him. And, you know, his last time out, again, it was, you know, flashes of there's Taylor Jordan, and also times where, you know, Chicago was just able to get to him, and, you know, Chicago's got a really good lineup. You know, I remember looking at the stats of this series saying, okay, they play at Impact Field, which is like, you know, Coors Field on steroids. Let's see how they actually do on the road. And I looked it up, and they've hit 30 home runs at home. They've hit 30 on the road. So they're just a good lineup. And, you know, he kind of just struggled through that one too. But I have a ton of faith in Taylor Jordan there because once he can figure it out, we've already seen it this year, he can go on that roll for about a, you know, 4 or 5 starts straight where it's just sit back and, you know, enjoy the show because Taylor Jordan's going to put it on. But, yeah, it's been a kind of up and down season for him, but it was just kind of that heat exhaustion game, and it kind of just knocked him out of his rhythm. And he's shown flashes of getting back into it. It's probably just going to take that one game where he goes 7 straight of 1 run or, you know, a shutout, and all of a sudden Taylor Jordan's going to be back.
Well, let's jump on around the rest of the American Association at this point, and we're going to start out with player and pitcher of the week. We chose Josh Allen and from the St. Paul Saints as the player of the week, Luke Westfall as the pitcher of the week. American Association agreed with us about Allen, but chose John Brownell, I think if I'm saying that correct, from the Lincoln Salt Dogs. Any thoughts, Connor, about the performance of Allen or Westfall last week?
I haven't actually. Now, we played Chicago 6 times. We were lucky enough not to face Westfall. Thank goodness, because every time he goes out there, he's putting up video game numbers. It's unreal. It's unbelievable. It's not one of those where it's like, oh, he had another good start. Oh, he had another. It's like, oh, he actually gave up a hit this time. Oh, he actually gave up a run. Oh, he only struck out 7 tonight. Like, it's just silly what he's been able to do this year. And I, you know, again, thank God we did not have to face him this year. So, I probably would have enjoyed watching it at a certain extent as a baseball fan. Covering the Explorers, I would not have had fun, but I would probably have to agree with that. And then, you know, Josh Allen's had a heck of a year. I remember at the beginning of the season, Sean Aaronson was very high on Josh Allen. He was very excited for him with the Saints in 2019. And, you know, obviously being named to the All-Star team, he's near the top of the league in home runs. That's a good position to find him at second base. And, you know, obviously if you hit a grand slam walk-off home run, you should get some sort of award for that.
You know, Kevin, I wanted to mention earlier on in the season, you talked about coming out on your blog about having a Saints player of the week, and it seemed in the American Association that the Saint has been the player of the week.
Yeah, it's been kind of a challenge for me. I want to make sure that I am matching up with them. It would be kind of silly if I took one Saint and they took a different one, but no, he's been on the same wavelength, so it's all good.
Have been very impressive. Well, let's talk about the St. Paul Saints. Some big news around the team. Earlier in the day, they had signed right-hander Benji Waite, who pitched for the Saints a couple of seasons ago. But the big news, Josh Romanski signed and will be joining the Saints, actually in tonight's roster, tonight's opening lineup for the Saints out there. That's quite a pickup right there, Kevin.
Yeah, well, it's addressed a need. They really were only playing with one true outfielder for the last three or four games now, and it kind of looked like a beer league softball game where you knew you only got one good outfielder, and he was, and that was Dan Modell, and he kept cutting in front of the other guys, calling them off, trying to cover most of the outfield. So it was a need, and Romanski was available, so they pick up for the Saints.
What are you thinking about Josh Romanski in St. Paul there, Connor?
It feels like when Brett Favre went to the Minnesota Vikings. I mean, you know, Josh Romanski, you know, kind of behind Reggie Abercrombie is Mr. Goldeye, face of the franchise for so many years. And then even when I saw him in a Lincoln Salt Dogs uniform, I was like, that doesn't look right. That was like when he went to the New York Jets. Now with him going to the Saints, that kind of feels like when Favre went to the Vikings. It's like, okay, you know, I had my little time in Lincoln, but now I'm going to go to the team that I know that's going to hurt Winnipeg to see me in a Saint uniform. I'm sure for a lot of Gold Eyes fans, it's probably the last uniform that they wanted to see Josh Romanski in is in a St. Paul Saints uniform. So, yeah, it's a great addition for the Saints. I mean, a player of the year type caliber, you know, acquisition there. And, you know, obviously he's a fantastic ball player. And, you know, St. Paul, the rich just get on, you know, keep getting richer.
You know, we were comparing it to when Johnny Damon went from the Red Sox to the Yankees.
I mean, I still remember when that happened, too. Because I grew up in New England. I grew up in Rhode Island. And two Johnny Damon stories real quick is I remember when I was getting ready for school, my mom was the one to break the news to me. She walked in my room and said, Johnny Damon just signed with the Yankees. And I remember that entire day at school, everybody was just in a bad mood. And another one is I was at Fenway with my dad for a game back in 2003, I believe. And we were walking, it was the game right before the All-Star game, 2002, I think. It was whenever the All-Star game was in Miller Park in Milwaukee, and it was a tie. And Damon got selected to the All-Star game, but it was the game right before the All-Star break. They did a special thing where they let people run around the bases at Fenway. So I ran around the bases at Fenway before. And it was way after the game was over, and we're walking through the concourse of Fenway, and there's a guy ahead of me in a suit and carrying, you know, dragging a suitcase. And this was before he had all the long hair and beard and everything. And my dad says, Connor, give me your glove. And I'm like, why? And he goes, just give it to me. So I gave it to him. He grabs a Sharpie, goes, walks up to him, Mr. Damon, can you sign this for me? He goes, oh, yeah, no problem. Signs it. My dad's like, all right, hey, good luck at the All-Star game. He's like, oh, thank you. And gave it back to him like, oh, my God, that was Johnny Damon. I didn't even recognize him. So, yeah, when he signed with the Yankees, that one really hurt.
Already tonight, Romanski had his first at-bat, and he nearly hit one out of it. Hit one just off the top of the wall in the right center. He had quite a fist pump when he got to second base, too. It was almost like there was all this pent-up energy just waiting to get out. So it's been a small sample size one at-bat, but a good start so far for Romanski with St. Paul.
The interesting thing about the Saints this season is they've lost some guys, had some key injuries. Always, manager George Samus has figured out a way to come up with some guys to replace this new Chris Baker, who's joined the team, hitting 305 games with 5 walks and 7 RBI. You know, Kevin, I know this is kind of gaudy territorial to talk about here, but the performance in Samus this season bringing in guys kind of reminds me a lot of what Joe Calfapietro was able to pull off last year in Kansas City.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's an ongoing process between injuries and signings, mostly injuries as a way, and seeing some of them kind of like a walking mass unit. But yeah, Samus, much like Calpapietra a year ago, is kind of got his kind of MacGyver the team together, and they still have been winning even with all the roster turnover. I'm guessing they probably need name tags in the locker room right now.
The big news, though, is that Eddie Medina is going to try to get a startup this Saturday, so that's huge news if he's able to go and the arm looks good.
Yeah, that's going to be a wait-and-see deal. I know he pitched last Friday night, and it was the same thing where he just wasn't the usual Eddie Medina. That he's got a lot of discomfort in that right elbow right now, but he's too much of a gamer to not be out there, so we'll see how... We'll see if the rest does Medina some good on Saturday night.
Well, let's head on to the Fargo Moorhead Redhawks. 25-5 over their last 30 games, .330 average, 2.94 ERA in the last seven games. This team is just looking like everything is firing on the right cylinders right now. Connor, you guys got to see them just about a week ago, and what were your thoughts about what you saw in Fargo?
They reminded me of the 2018 Sioux City Explorers, because I mentioned on my broadcast that I said it, and as soon as I said it, I realized what I had said. Basically, it was early in the game, and the X's had jumped out to like a 2-0 lead. I was like, this is great. It's a good start, but you need more, because Fargo's going to get theirs at some point. There's no doubt about it. It's not a lineup that you can simply go out there and shut out for nine innings. And as soon as I said that, I said to myself, you know what, I wonder how many broadcasters said the same thing about the Sioux City Explorers from last season of, you know, hey, we're up 2-3 early on, but and that's great, but we need more. We can't go up 3-0 and then sit back and hopefully this lead holds for the entire game, because, you know, they're going to get theirs, they're going to come back, and Fargo does that. And like I said, Fargo's one of those teams where, you know, they might not chip away at your deficit where they get a run here, a run there, two here. They're going to go out, and all of a sudden, you might shut them out for three innings, and then in the fourth, they're going to put up a crooked number on you. And that's what they've kind of done this year. They have a ton of speed at the top of that lineup in Metzger, Colon, and Ahart, and all three of them can really swing it. And, of course, you get Carell Prime and Chris Jacobs, which is a terrifying 1-2 combo in the middle of that lineup that's tough to navigate. And then it's not really fair when they have a player like Leobaldo Pena sitting kind of at the bottom of their lineup, the 7 or 8 spot most of the year. And, you know, he can really, you know, pick the ball over at third. And I think he's been on a long hitting streak as well here over these last couple of weeks. So, you know, they're a complete team when it comes to that. And then, you know, the pitching has been fantastic this year as well. I think they rank at the top of the league in ERA. So, you know, they just overtook Sioux Falls for the best hitting team in the league, and they have the top ERA in the league. Jeff Broussard at the back of their bullpen. We had Broussard last year in Sioux City, just at the fit didn't quite work out. You know, he got a change of scenery, and he's really blossomed at Fargo, and now all of a sudden he's back to being what the Explorers thought we were going to get in from him last year. That's a complete lockdown, shutdown, ninth inning guy. You know, he's anchoring a very good Fargo bullpen. So, yeah, Fargo's the real deal as far as I'm concerned. They're going to be really tough to beat. And they kind of, at the beginning of the season, were playing decent baseball, and then they rode that 10-game winning streak, and they haven't really let go of that since.
You know, I look at their stats right now, and the nine guys that are their regulars, nobody's hitting below 269. Yoshi Medina, a guy you think of more for his fielding than his offense, has got his batting average up to 269 now.
Yeah, that is quite a group out there. You know, I'm kind of wondering in the comparison that you just gave there, Connor, about, you know, there is a lot of similarities I see in that Sioux City team. I wonder if this is becoming a scenario where the teams chasing them right now, especially as Chicago and a St. Paul, are kind of thinking, we might as well start kind of focusing on second place because it might be hard to catch this team and even get into first any longer now.
Yeah, and I was thinking of that for when Chicago was just in Sioux City. You know, I kept looking at them like, yeah, you could get back to first, but your realistic goal right now should be just looking at St. Paul at the top of the, you know, as the team in the standings. And if you're St. Paul, I think St. Paul's just a few games behind Fargo. They could probably catch them if somehow the Redhawks, you know, I don't think they're going to go on a pace of 25-5 for the entire rest of the season. It might be more like 20-10, but that's still fantastic. You know, St. Paul might be able to get to them. if St. Paul goes on a really hot stretch. But, yeah, I was thinking, like, for Chicago and especially Winnipeg, St. Paul's probably your target right now in the North.
Absolutely. Well, let's head on and talk about Chicago a little bit. After their winning streak was finally snapped there at 10 games, still 13-3 over their last 16, three big victories over the Canaries where they won each of those games in the eighth inning or later. This team is really something impressive right now, and it's going to be, I'm thinking it's going to be a little more difficult for St. Paul to kind of hold them off right now. What are your thoughts, Kevin?
You know, you watch the Chicago Ducks, I don't know if it's the uniforms or what, but it just seems like it's like a softball team playing. It's like a team full of guys that can just clobber the baseball. And yeah, if you guys keep hitting the way they've been, it seems like they've been getting some good pitching, obviously, with Westfall head and the staff. It should be really tough for St. Paul to hold these guys off. And as we were talking about with the South Division, you go into the last couple weeks of the season, there's two huge series between Chicago and St. Paul, including the last three at Impact Field. So it's, unless Winnipeg sticks their neck back in, it's going to be a two-way battle between the Dogs and the Saints.
You got to see those crazy Dogs up close as well, Connor, and they are just a team that is, a lot of ways, reminds me of Fargo and the fact that you can just never count them out of ball games. Is this a team, though, that you see? I mean, Luke Westfall just kind of stuns me, Connor, because here's a guy who has had an okay career, but nothing like we're seeing right now. And I'm kind of wondering, is this just kind of everybody having a good moment, or is this team really as formidable as they look?
I think they're as formidable as they look. I mean, for Westfall, you think if you would have seen the drop-off, you would have seen it by now, halfway now into the season. And I mentioned it a lot on my broadcast here this past series that we had with them this week, was their pitching rotation, while the numbers, the counting, you know, the ERA and the wins and losses, the stats that everybody looks at, in this game of, you know, now analytics in the world of baseball, and I love them. I eat those stats up. Kind of the underlying metrics, the peripherals saying, hey, yeah, he's got an ERA of this, but, you know, it should be. He's kind of been getting unlucky this year. He's actually been doing this really well. All three starters we saw this week, you know, had the peripherals of, like, this guy should be doing better. You know, Jake Dahlberg looked really good against us in his first start. We kind of roughed him up a little bit in game one. But even then, I remember saying, I was like, this is kind of surprising. I thought Dahlberg was going to go out and be really good tonight. Austin Wright was fantastic against us. And then their bullpen last night, we got to see McSherry was really good. Halbin was pretty good for three innings out of the pen. He's got that really herky-jerky movement and a really tall guy out of the pen. He was fantastic for him last night. And, you know, Carlos Zambrano, you can't count him out. He's, you know, he's not just a sideshow for the Chicago Dogs and a way to sell tickets. He's actually been a really big part of their bullpen with an ERA under 4 and over 20 appearances now. Their pitching, I think, is actually maybe even a little better than, you know, what the numbers indicate. If you look at what the kind of the underlying stats, they've been really good. And then, of course, their lineup, you're exactly right, Rob. They're just like Fargo. They have Barnum and Roach in the middle of that lineup. And, you know, you might get them one inning, but then you know one inning they're going to get you. Barnum has three multi-home run games on the season now, and two of them have come against the Sioux City Explorers. So, yeah, he's been etched into our nightmares that we've had of late. As, you know, Jordan Dean, too, he's had a big year against the Exes. And I think Edwin Arroyo this past series went, like, 9 for 11 or 9 for 12 against us. I mean, it's impressive to hit 500 in a series, let alone, like, 800 like he just hit. So, the Chicago Dogs, I think they're really good. I think they're legit. It's just, yeah, whether they're probably in the wrong division for, you know, to try to chase down a playoff spot. You know, the Fargo Moorhead Redhawks and the St. Paul Saints, they're definitely not going anywhere. So it's going to be tough for Chicago. They might end up like what last year the Wichita Wingnuts were, a fantastic team and a playoff team in every other year that the league has ever been around, just not last year.
You know, Kevin, let's move on there to the Winnipeg Goldeyes. As surprised as we are to see a Josh Romanski go because of how important he has been for the Winnipeg Goldeyes, you've talked about it for the last month about how impressive Tyler Hill has been, 398 in his 22 games on a 17-game hitting streak right now. Honestly, there just isn't any room for Romanski.
No, and I was talking about that weeks ago, that when Romanski was healthy again, that Winnipeg is going to have to make a tough decision, and apparently that decision was to stick with the guys they got now with the three outfielders and one DH. You got with Hill, Harris, Garcia, and Abercrombie. You know, Abercrombie, I guess you can kind of debate whether the age is catching up with them or not, but the other guys deserve to be out there, so I guess you kind of defer to the veteran with Reggie, and they're just also in a spot for Romanski, so yeah, lo and behold, here he is in St. Paul.
You know, Connor, I'm curious about your thoughts at this point. Winnipeg has obviously got a tough battle moving forward here because you have a red-hot Chicago Dogs team, a red-hot Fargo-Moorhead Red Hawks team. You have a St. Paul Saints team that has really played exceptionally well. Is Winnipeg kind of like Lincoln last season where they were having a good year, but there's just, you know, you're just not going to be in that top three?
Yeah, it might be for them. They might be a good team among great ones between – you know, Fargo, St. Paul, and Chicago, and they just might be on the outside of that bubble looking in. You know, Abercrombie, the average is down, but the counting stats, home runs, RBIs, runs scored, they're all still there for him. You know, the pitching's been, it's been good. You know, Parker French has had a pretty good season for them. You know, McGovern is always pretty good for them. And of course, Capion at the end of ball games has been, you know, fantastic his entire career with Winnipeg. But, yeah, that might just be it for them. They might be a good team, just, you know, among the great ones of the top three in that North Division. And, you know, for Winnipeg, it might be one of those where if they're in the South, they'd be at the top of the division or, you know, fighting for a playoff spot. They just happen to be on the wrong side of things.
Well, let's head on to the Milwaukee Milkmen. Kevin, a big moment in Milwaukee Milkmen history last night.
Right, Adam Walker, someone that people that follow the Minnesota Twins know that he was a power-hitting prospect for them. He's hit three home runs last night against the Texas Airhawks and shown the power that a lot of us expected to see out of him. But he had really struggled to start the season, but if you look at it now, he's got the batting average up to .265. Yeah, he's going to get you a fair share of strikeouts, but boy, you know, if he can be a consistent threat in that lineup, you know, the Milkmen they can be a pesky team at times. So you get Walker banging the ball in the park. That's quite a bat to have in the middle of that lineup.
You've got a pretty good look at the Milwaukee Milkmen this season as well, Connor. I think you guys have played six games, gone 3-3 against them. So what have been your overall thoughts on those exciting Milkmen?
Their pitching, the top of their pitching rotation is very good between TJ House and Angel Ventura. They, you know, they both got selected to the All-Star team in the North, and incredibly well-deserving Ventura, you know, shut us down a couple of times. We got to House in the second game, but I remember looking at stats. He goes at least six innings in every one of his starts now. I think only two games, or two starts for him have not been a quality start. That speaks for itself right there. He's been absolutely fantastic for the Milkmen here this season. So the top of their bullpen is great. The back end of their bullpen is very good. It's kind of in the middle there that they've kind of had trouble with getting from that, you know, starter like Ventura in House. If they don't go six, you know, seven or eight innings, if they have to bridge the gap in the seventh and eighth, 2 miles skip at the end, that's where the bullpen kind of gets a little murky there. And then the back end of the rotation, which, I mean, there's a lot of teams with questions at the back end of their rotation. That's usually what your number four and five starters are. But, and then hitting-wise, Adam Walker. I had mentioned the first game we saw him, and Kevin just mentioned he's gotten that average up to 260. I think when we first saw him, it was in the 220s. And I had made the comment during his at-bat on the air that he's just one of these guys that is a three true outcome guy, strikeout, walker, home run. And, you know, he's going to have a very low average, but he's going to, if he runs into one, it's going to go a long ways. And that's what he does, and that's what he brings to a table. That's where baseball's going. If you go 1-for-4 and 3 strikeouts with a home run, you had a good night. And I know that players listen to all their at-bats. They watch all of their at-bats at the end of each night. They go back and listen to them. And I'm guessing he might have heard what I said, and I'm guessing he did not agree with it and kind of took it out on the Sioux City Explorers from there on out, because after that he would have, you know, 2 or 3-for-4 games with, you know, singles, doubles, RBIs, runs scored, home runs. And he did it all against us. So, yeah, he was really impressive against Sioux City this season. And, of course, after I make that comment that he's a 3 true outcome guy, which, yeah, I've been proven wrong about that. He's a fantastic player.
He could have waited a day or two, I think is what you're saying.
I should have. I know. I could have, yeah, it was like the first at bat. It was just a quick, I looked at his stats and I'm like, oh, low average for a lot of pound. Okay, I know what this guy is. And yeah, he must have listened to that and said, oh, okay, buddy, let me show you. And yeah, so now every time he plays the Explorers, he's going to have that. Luckily, we're done with him, though.
Milwaukee looking for their first sweep of the season, losing right now at the moment to the Texas Airhogs, so we'll see if they're able to pull that out. We move on to the Gary South Shore Railcats. Kevin, Dan Vaughn had an interesting discussion about this team, about how Greg Taggart has been able to, you know, use this younger group and use a lot of rookies all this time, but because of how impressive and the talent level in the American Association that we see these days, that formula just isn't working anymore.
No, from, you know, it's worked for Taggart for so many years, but as many of us around the league have commented, the talent level in this league is just keeps getting better every year, and the formula used by Taggart may be coming a little outdated. Some rookies coming in are getting a little overwhelmed by the talent level in the American Association, and they may have finally caught up to the Railcats.
You've got to watch the Railcats for a couple seasons as the broadcaster for Sioux City out there, Connor. And, you know, they're one of those pesky kind of teams that nobody likes to face, but it just looks like this is not the same kind of team that I guess that we've seen over the last dozen years or so.
Yeah, no, and every time I talk to Steve Montgomery about him, it always feels like the Railcats are kind of a carbon copy of the Explorers. I should say carbon copy of the Railcats. You know, because Mago's built his teams around good pitching. You know, fundamental baseball, let's play small ball, let's use speed, let the other team make mistakes and we take advantage of it. But at the same time, yeah, Mago goes out and gets, I guess you could just say, you know, more high profile and more talented players. And, you know, Gary's used the system of the entire time of, you know, let's have a lot of rookies and kind of intermingle our roster here and there and find the best fit for this day and this situation and this series. And I think you and Kevin hit it right on the head with there. And I've mentioned it, and I know a lot of other broadcasters have mentioned it, that, you know, there's just a lot more talent in this league. The parity level in this season is incredible. You don't feel like there's anybody that can't beat anyone else on any given night. And, you know, Gary's just kind of gotten lost in the shuffle there at the bottom of the North Division with that. Kind of everyone else has sped on past him. And, you know, while it's, yes, the Gary South Shore Railcats and, you know, still playing, you know, the Greg Taggart way of baseball and, you know, playing that way with Gary, they're going to, you know, probably steal a series here and there and might play spoiler at the end of the season for a couple of teams. For over 100-game season here this year with the talent level in the rest of the league, it's just not working for him.
Well, let's head to the South and the Cleburne Railroaders, who after losing 5 games in a row have won 19 of their last 25. And the big story out there, I would say, Kevin, is the Kansas City Castoffs have made a big contribution down there in Cleburne.
Yeah, a couple guys at the Bones. Don't really want to say Gabe because they had to make room for some good players, but Daniel Robertson and Ryan Brett have been godsends to the Cleburne lineup that was struggling to score runs at the beginning of the season, but have really picked it up as of late.
What are your thoughts about Cleburne? As this is probably going to be the team, you're one of the two teams you're battling with to try to win a division title down there, Connor.
I'm just happy that Brad Ulrich's in a good mood. I mean, you know, I love Brad. He's awesome. But he's one of those people that if Cleburne loses, you just kind of, you know, oh, yep, see you tomorrow, Brad, and just, you know, let him go home and, you know, take, cool it off and then come on back. But I had mentioned this to him because I think the five games in a row you had mentioned they lost, four of them were to the Explorers. We swept them in a four-game series. And, I remember at the end of that, I mean, Brad was just, you know, beside himself. He was like, man, we, you know, beginning of the season, I thought we had it. We were right there. And I remember telling him that, you know, now with your, you know, bringing basically kind of the Wichita wing that's down, you know, Robertson knows what he's doing. He's built so many winners before that, you know, last year's Cleveland team, they got into trouble. They didn't really kind of try to fix it. They just thought they would play themselves out of it, and it never happened. Whereas this year, Robertson, you know, they had their troubles. And like you said, they bring in the Kansas City players, and all of a sudden, you know, things have flipped around and worked for them. So I had mentioned that, you know, for Cleveland, I thought they were going to be fine. Every team goes through their little bit of slumps and losing streaks, but, you know, Robertson would find a way, and of course, Cleveland, the manager, would find a way to make those changes, to get the right players in there, put them in the right positions, and, yeah, you're definitely seeing that now with Cleveland.
You know, you were talking about Brad and how intense he is about his team. I just have to share the story with you because there are a lot of broadcasters in the American Association that are very intense about their team. And my favorite is Dan Vaughn still. Because last year when you guys were playing them, I think you guys were winning like 9-1, and Kansas City had battled back in that game and was down by a run with the bases loaded in the bottom of the ninth inning.
Oh.
You know what game I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Okay. And so the bases are loaded, and a guy hits, I think it was Mason Davis, hit a ball down to third. And I'm listening to Dan call it. It was one out, and Dan goes, ball hit down to third, throws over to second. Damn it! It was just the best thing. I was just laughing so much.
Mongo loves listening to that one. He thinks that's so funny because, yeah, we turn a game-ending double play after we almost blow a six-run lead in the ninth. And you hear Dan just like, yeah, double play and game's over. You hear something in the background, whether he hit the table, threw something, you know, you hear something crash and he goes, well, all right, be back for the postgame. So like nothing had ever happened. He just got that out of his system. It's right back to, all right, well, welcome. Well, join us for the postgame show coming up next. So, yeah, that was fun. I know, as soon as you started mentioning that story, I was like, I know exactly what this one is.
Speaking of Kansas City, let's move down to them. You know, right now this team, I'm just kind of looking at them, Kevin, and thinking there's something missing right now because, you know, they haven't really kind of got on a roll. They've won some big games, currently losing right now, but have won some big games this season, but still just have not put together the right chemistry or whatever it is at this point.
No, it just doesn't, you know, you look at individual numbers and there's just some guys that I expect a lot more out of Daniel Nava. I think he's in around 243 at this point, and you didn't expect that out of Nava. Look at a guy like Chris Colabello. You thought there would be more power out of him after signing him. Pretty much meant that Ryan Brett went to Cleburne, so you'd hope more than a 274 hitter out of your cleanup man. But in that being said, there's still a talent there, and I wouldn't count this T-Bone team out. Looks like Dylan Baker had a really good start for them yesterday. Tommy Collier is kind of struggling tonight, but Collier will, you know, he's one of those guys who'll be your reliable arm in the end. So, yeah, it was a strange night the other night. Carlos Diaz just couldn't close the show down, and I'm sure they're not going to dump him as a closer after one bad night, but Brian Ellington has been fabulous for them, and he closed the game yesterday, and I think if there's any more hiccups in Diaz, you'll see Ellington possibly slide into the closer role. So they can figure out the rotation and get these guys hitting as good as their resume says. T-Bone's going to be right in it at the end.
You know, Connor, as I look around the South, it seems that beyond Cleburne at this particular point, that everybody has one or two pieces that are kind of missing out at this point. Sioux Falls, it just looks like they're on the cusp of doing something really good, but just haven't been able to put together a big win streak since they had one earlier this year. Kansas City looks like they've got a couple of holes. Sioux City even looks like they have a couple of holes. Are you looking at these, at the Sioux Falls and Kansas City in particular, and seeing kind of vulnerabilities that the Explorers can really take advantage of?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, Kansas City is going to get the big name guys, and they're going to have talented players that come in there. But what I noticed that the other night, for that ballpark, their home run numbers are actually pretty down. You know, that's a place where really, like Sioux Falls or like Chicago, no lead is safe just because, you know, left field is such a short porch there. If you yank it straight out to right, that can get out of there in a hurry. And then, of course, the gaps are huge. And that's just a place where no lead is safe. And, you know, we experienced that both ways in a doubleheader with them earlier this season. But I had noticed that their numbers were down. And like Kevin said, you know, Chris Colabella, you maybe expect a little more out of him. You know, Daniel Nava, who's been good but not fantastic, which, you know, as a big Red Sox fan, I got to meet Daniel Nava when we were down there, which was fantastic. He's a nice guy, nicest guy you could ever imagine, which that really rubbed Steve Montgomery the wrong way. But I know he listens to all these, so I know that's just going to really get under his skin that I mentioned Daniel Nava again. Yeah, it just feels like they, yeah, you're right, they're missing a little bit of a piece. You know, their bullpen was fantastic last season. I mean, it was right up there with Sioux City for probably the best in the league between guys like, you know, Winnie Arski and some other names are escaping me. There's one in Winnipeg right now that I can't remember.
Filomeno?
Yeah, Filomeno. Filomeno was one. And
starts with an M.
Starts with an M.
Yeah, yeah. Marcus Crescentini, is that right?
That's it, Marcus Crescentini, yeah. I mean, between those three arms, if you knew they came into the game, it was over. You weren't getting those runs back. It feels like they just don't have that this year. And then when it comes to Sioux Falls, an incredible lineup and a very dangerous ballpark for it. And their kind of Achilles heel this season has been pitching. You know, their team ERA is near the bottom of the league. You know, sometimes their starters can go out there and give you a great outing, and then there's not much in the bullpen left. Or sometimes the starter goes out there and, you know, they can't get it done for you. So we're seeing him this weekend, but I know the couple of times that we've seen them, it's been the pitching that has let them down every time we faced them. I mean, there's two games we played them in Sioux City where we had Jason Garcia and Taylor Jordan, and, you know, they put up just a cement wall in front of that Sioux Falls offense, and the series after them in St. Paul combined for, you know, a million runs. And so that was impressive for our guys to go do that. But our offense still rolled against their pitching, and even when we were up in Sioux Falls, you know, the one game we won, Sampson had a 3-run home run in the late innings to propel us in that win. So it was their bullpen that led down there. So they have a fantastic lineup, but yeah, it's the pitching that's kind of let down the birds this year.
Moving on to the Lincoln Salt Dogs. Kevin, last week, we had talked 2 weeks ago, actually, about Lincoln was going to have a golden opportunity to really establish themselves, and probably one more week from now, we're going to be talking about whether this team is a legitimate contender anymore. They go out and sweep Winnipeg and then lose four straight, posting a 6.37 ERA over their last seven games. I'm starting to wonder if, you know, it's time to start kicking a little dirt on the Salt Dogs?
Well, it's kind of a tough schedule they have, too. The drive from Lincoln up to Fargo, play two games, and then now they've driven all the way down to Texas. So, you know, they got to be a little robbery, too. Granted, every team's got to do it, but, you know, this is a crucial set of games for the Salt Dogs, so they have to be dealing with travel along with trying to beat two very good teams. It's got to be tough on a squad. So, yeah, the key for them is just to kind of stay in the race, and like we said, you know, there's a lot of games within the division in the second half, and that's when they're going to have to try to stay in striking range, and, you know, you throw a couple sweeps together, and you're right back in it.
You've looked at Lincoln. You've got to watch how Lincoln, it's one of the toughest ballparks to play in, I think, Connor, and so should we be trying to throw dirt on him at this point, or is this just too much season left right now?
I think there's just a little too much season left on because they have a really good pitching staff. You know, John Brownell is very good as, you know, Point Streak named him the pitcher of the week over Luke Westfall for you guys. And Nick Tepish has looked fantastic against us the couple of times that we've faced him. You know, their pitching's really good, and of course, if you can, Kurt Smith can carry you at any time, right off Odeberg can carry you at any time. You know, Cody Regis has had an incredible year for them. So, you know, they still have the pieces there. They're kind of one of those teams like Kansas City and Sioux Falls where I kind of lump them into the same group and say they're maybe two pieces away. But, you know, if they can make the right move here and there down the stretch, I could see them making a run and getting hot here at the end and kind of, you know, making a run in that South Division, which all you really need is anywhere between 5 to 10 wins in a row, and all of a sudden you're probably right back in it and, you know, first, second, or third place and, you know, battling for a playoff spot.
You know, I could look it up, but I thought I heard last week that Tepish retired.
That Tepish retired? Well, I missed that.
Yeah, I don't know where I heard that from, but he had an outing, his last outing, then right after that decided to hang it up. So, you know, that's tough for a team, too, and you got a guy like Tepish that you thought was going to be your ace, and he just says, well, okay, guys, well, I'm done. Pick her up from here.
Yeah, then it might be time. I didn't know that. Then you basically, you lost your ace. That's a huge piece you just lost right there. So, I don't know. Then Lincoln, I'd say, is not just one or two pieces, but three or four away from getting back in because he was a huge part of that rotation.
Yeah, looking at his stats right now, he was 6-4, and his last outing was a win against Kansas City on July 5th. So. Yeah, I thought he was going to dominate this league, and he got off to a really good start, but the middle part was pretty rocky, and I guess he never told these guys whether they had, like, a job offer outside the game or what happens, but he decided to hang it up.
Well, he was, like, one of the five or six best pitchers in the league, I thought.
Huh. Yeah, he doesn't play for the Dallas Stars, so Michael Dixon failed to tell me about that.
There you go. the last thing we did want to mention about the Texas Air Hogs, last year John McLaren managed the team and was pretty adamant that his American players were not going to be traded away, that he wanted them to have a educational influence on the Chinese players that were with the Texas team last year. I had a discussion about this with Chris Bando a couple days ago, and he's not averse to this at all. He's telling me if guys have an opportunity to further their career or to have better opportunity to win in another place, he wasn't going to stand in the way of somebody having that kind of success, which I think bodes really well for a guy like Stuart Imes.
But last year was Dylan Thomas sweepstakes. Obviously, you don't have a guy like Thomas on there, but there are solid players like Stuart Imes or Lawrence Baroni that are going to garner some interest come trade deadline.
How would Stuart Imes fit into that Sioux City lineup there, Connor?
I think he'd fit in pretty well. You know, Mongo always helps or holds him in very high regard when he makes out the lineup card each night and sees where he is in the lineup. And I know obviously he's a big piece in that lineup. He's probably the most threatening bat of the starting nine for Texas each and every night. But, I think if Steve Montgomery got a call about Stuart Imes, which I think Mongo refuses to pronounce the I and just calls him James, we might have some confusing times in the clubhouse, but I'm almost certain he would definitely take that call.
With all apologies to former New England running back Lawrence Maroney, it's James Maroney that I was referring to earlier. That's hitting 321 for the Air Hawks, who ironically enough are winning 2-0 so far tonight. But 3-0 now against Milwaukee.
Yeah, trying to make sure they're not swept. So that's bad news for Milwaukee.
And former Gophers running back, too, Lawrence Maroney.
Yes. Back when we used to be a running back U up here.
Him and Marion Barber. Yeah, he used to be a heck of a 1-2 punch.
Well, let's head around independent baseball. Two big stories out of the Atlantic League where somehow or another, Frank Viola got thrown out of a game for arguing balls and strikes, Kevin.
With a computerized strike zone, not sure exactly what that argument could have consisted of, but Yeah, former Cy Young Award winner for the Minnesota Twins found a way to get himself tossed. So, yeah, I must have had a couple magic words. I can't imagine how else he would have got himself tossed for that.
How do you offend a computer, I guess is what I'm wondering. I mean, how does a computer throw you out? You know, I got to tell you, Connor, when I read this story originally, I had no doubt in my mind that Steve Montgomery couldn't be thrown out of a game for the same reason.
I mean, he's the same when it comes to being on the baseball field, isn't he? I mean, I don't think I've ever seen Steve Montgomery act up at all on a baseball fielder, use a few choice words, or ever get upset about anything in the game of baseball. Yeah, no, he's... He's a perfect model of, pleasant behavior when it comes to, baseball.
I'm glad we're not the same.
Did the computer tell the umpire to throw him out?
That's a good question. That's a good question.
Throw him out.
I watched the actual thing of it, and it looks like he said something to the umpire, who pointed to the little earpiece he has in that tells him what a ball and strike is, and then he just kept mouthing off, and the umpire threw him out. And I'm just like, dude, what do you want the umpire to do? You know, there's really nothing he can say. He's got to go by whatever the computer comes up with. So I don't really get that. But the other big news, though,
are allowed to overrule it.
I'm not sure if that's true or not, though.
I've heard they can.
I thought it was like egregious enough that they could, and I've seen some videos that are like, how in the, like, what is going on with the computer?
Okay, well, see, I learned something new tonight. We'll have to check that one out, though, because maybe he did have a legitimate beef there then at that point. The other big news out of the Atlantic League is that Tony Thomas became the first player in professional baseball history to steal first base, Kevin. Former St. Paul Saint Tony Thomas.
Yes, he became the Ron Bloomberg of stealing first base. I have a dubious honor, and look at the staff. He actually got charged for an at bat with no hit. So,
oh, really?
So I'm wondering if you're going to have guys that are going to think, oh, shoot, I don't want my bad having to take a beating here. Screw that. I want to still hit.
Well, that's interesting. I didn't know they recorded things that way. What are your thoughts on being able to steal first base there, Connor?
Yeah, I saw the same thing that Kevin saw where you don't get a stolen base and you don't get a hit, or, you know, it goes against your batting average, kind of goes for your on-base percentage, but basically almost like a fielder's choice. So for some guys, yeah, that's what I was thinking. They might watch the ball roll past the catcher and they might just stand there and look at it and go, okay, that's nice. I'm going to stay here and try to get my hit. Whereas there's other guys, where has this been for the Explorers with all the speed that we've had over the years? You imagine how many guys we could have had on base with that rule. I mean, Michael Lang's on base percentage would have been like 800 over the last few years if we had that rule in this league. So, I don't know. I'm waiting for the first guy to see the ball roll past and basically just stand there and go, nope, I'm good. I'll just stay here. Because isn't that just if you're the pitcher, doesn't that make you angry? Aren't you sitting there going, wait, what do you think you're going to get off of me? Like, you think you're too good that you don't even take first right now? Are you kidding me?
That is a really interesting perspective. You can get under the pitcher's skin in a different way than my, you know, someone might really take offense to that and then get kind of worked up. So that would make for an interesting battle.
Yeah, pitcher might not give you a choice.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I have to honestly tell you guys is that this is one of those moments in life now that I'll remember where I was when Tony Thomas was the first professional player to steal a base there from home. I mean, I'm going to be like, wow. You know, it's kind of like, where were you when 9-1-1 occurred or Kennedy was shot? It'll be, this will be my moment like that. Is that little too overdramatic?
Did he get to keep the ball?
I don't know. Or the base or whatever. I'm not sure.
Yeah, you got to have some talking over from this achievement.
Is it on its way to Cooperstown? What's going on with that right there? You know, every season, Kevin, I think we're always talking about some new independent league that's springing up, and there's another one out there.
Yeah, it just popped up this afternoon. Kayla Thompson, who does a really good job of covering independent baseball, her primary focus is all on the East Coast, but she's got a lot of ins with people throughout the independent baseball industry. She posted this afternoon that there's a Western Association of Independent Baseball that's supposed to start up on June of 2020. eight teams in Arizona, California, Colorado, Nevada. 78-game season, but they won't start till late June, and they're done early September. That seems to be a little compressed. And the top four teams will make the playoffs. So right now, it's just a lot of it's a website, and that's pretty much what you got. You don't have any franchises yet, so it could just be another person dreaming of being an independent ball operator. We always see these fly-by-night leagues, and we'll see if this is another one or if for once it's legit.
It's an interesting scenario because we saw the Southwest League was supposed to start this season. We have seen the United League with 2014, I believe that was. There was, what was the league that, I'm trying to think, it was like 2015 or 2016 where they were in operation for just a couple of months or something, and then guys were sleeping on the trainer's table and they were running out of money. And then last year, I think there was also, a guy who tried to put together an independent team that everybody played in the same city, and that kind of fell apart. So not as easy as everyone seems to think it is.
Connor, have you ever heard of Marty Neff?
Oh, man, the name sounds familiar, but I couldn't tell you why.
He was with Sioux City for like the first two or three years of their existence, and I know he played for St. Paul briefly, but I thought I heard when he played for Sioux City that he actually did a lot of nights stayed at the ballpark, slept on the trainer's table, just because he wanted to. But he was really popular down there.
See, I probably, that's why the name's probably popular. I've probably seen it in all the, career record books for the Explorers, and, when I'm seeing what franchise record Michael Lang is breaking today, it's, his name is probably up in there, but, no, I could believe it. I've had my fair share of nights sleeping at the ballpark, and I know usually the trainer's table is reserved kind of for the clubhouse manager after he finishes up at like 4 or 5 in the morning and just sleeps till the team gets there or something.
Doesn't Mongo have a couch or something for you there you could just take over?
He does now. He brought in like a couch that he split into two parts. He put a mini fridge in between, and I'll tell you what, once you get kind of sat down and it reclines for you, once you get sat down and nestled in for a little bit, it's hard to get out. Like, there's been a lot of times where I'm sitting there for 20 minutes, and I'm like, all right, I need to go back to work. I have a new roster to make. I have this to do. I have this, this, and this. I still have to get a pregame interview. And then, I'm like, yeah, but another 20 minutes, and this will be really nice. So, yeah, he has a couch in there now. And I know Bobby Post, he kind of does the whole shut-eye thing, and he'll do, like, the dad with the remote or something. He tried to change Smogo's TV. He's like, hey, I was watching that. So, it can be pretty comfy in there sometimes.
Big series this weekend. The St. Paul Saints travel up to Fargo in a battle of 1-2 teams in the North Division. Sioux City hosting Sioux Falls in a battle of two teams that really need to get kind of on a roll here to get themselves up into the second position in the division. And the Winnipeg Gold Eyes travel to the Kansas City T-Bones. Kevin, tell me a little bit about those three series and what stands out for you.
Well, you look at the week ahead of my computer here. Sioux Falls and Sioux City, a sweep in either direction is going to be huge detrimental if anyone does get swept in it. So, it seems just right in the thick of it. St. Paul, Fargo, Moorhead, St. Paul can somehow manage to go get one or two out of three up there and stay close. Otherwise, you get swept to Fargo, Moorhead, now you're looking at a 5-game deficit, then you may as well focus on the teams behind you. Winnipeg and KC should be an interesting matchup. That always seems like it is when those two teams get together. So KC is still trying to find themselves, and Winnipeg's trying to put together a streak. So, yeah, that's three really appealing series this weekend.
As you look at the matchups coming up this weekend for Sioux Falls and Sioux City, Connor, What do you think is going to be the big game of the weekend?
Well, actually, tomorrow we play a doubleheader. So we had a game on June 23rd suspended due to rain in the second inning. So we picked that up tomorrow at 4 o'clock. And that's the Canaries leading 3-0, bases loaded, two outs at the top of the second. So still a lot of baseball to play in that one. But then you have to turn right around and, play a doubleheader on right after that, and then obviously Saturday and Sunday. And I kept kind of talking to myself last night during the Chicago game of, we have a day off today, so go ahead and use the bullpen. But we have a doubleheader on Friday. But you have the All-Star break coming up for 2 days, so you can use your bullpen as much as you want. But we have three arms out of that bullpen going to the All-Star game, so not really. I mean, it's like that might be the biggest thing is how does Steve Montgomery navigate his bullpen for a four-game series in 3 days against a very good lineup in Sioux Falls in which, you can't fault your starting pitcher if they're only able to make it through the first, five, six innings of that game and give up three, four runs. I mean, that's, the Canaries have that good of a lineup that you'll take that out of your starting pitcher, no doubt, but, it's going to turn into how does your bullpen handle it. So it'll be interesting to see how Mongo handles the pen here this weekend. We have Sierra going tomorrow, which actually, funny enough, he started the first two innings of the suspended game. So in the end, his stat line is going to look pretty normal, and he's been fantastic for us out of the bullpen. Eric Karch gets the start in game number two, or to be announced on Saturday, and then Sunday, Taylor Jordan gets to take on the Canaries for the third time, second time back at home in Sioux City, which Lewis and Clark Park is a much different ballpark than the Birdcage. So, it'll be interesting, and it's big because Sioux Falls is right on our tail for third place in the South Division, just a half game back. And, like Kevin said, in any other directions, all of a sudden that Sioux City or Sioux Falls, whoever wins that series is probably sitting in the driver's seat till the end of July in terms of trying to chase down Kansas City for that number two playoff spot.
All-Star game on Tuesday, home run derby Monday night. Who wins the home run derby, Connor, and who wins the All-Star game?
All-Star game, you probably have to, I will be rooting for the South since my Explorers will be on that team. But the North just has so much talent and it has been so good this year. It's kind of tough to pick against them. And then in terms of the Home Run Derby, I don't know who's in that. I didn't see all the names announced in that Home Run Derby.
I don't think they've announced anything.
Yeah. I'm just kind of looking at who would you expect based upon the roster that has the best shot of winning that, I guess.
Kurt Smith is your defending champ.
Kurt Smith, yep, I'm sure he will be. I would figure that Pena will be in there, and I would figure that Keon Barnum would be in there. Josh Allen, I'm sure, would be representing the Saints in that. Shoemaker, I would gather.
Steve Simpson. Because Brad Allen said he's going to be his Gatorade.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. That's right. I forgot about that. In the South, I would figure some guys. Cody Regis, I would figure, would be in there. John Nestor wouldn't surprise me. Kurt Smith will probably be in. Kevin Taylor wouldn't surprise to see in that. I think there's 12 they originally allowed to start. If I had my pick of the 12 that I'm just looking at, the guys that are on the team, I guess the guy that really stands out to me just because of that nice left-handed swing would be like a guy like Cody Regis. I could totally see him winning.
I'm probably going to go, my vote would be Keon Barnum. Maybe it's recency bias just seeing him this past week, and, he crushed a couple of home runs against us, so he's just got that, it's just such an easy swing and the ball goes a long ways.
And Kevin,
Chris Smith will defend.
You think so? I could see that too, because boy, he sure looked like he was having a fun time down there that in the home run derby last time. Who wins the game, Kevin?
You could tell with Kurt Smith too that he kind of knows what he's doing as far as the home run derby contest. He knows where he wants his guy to pitch, and he would just get in the group, and it would be ball after ball going over the fence. So
you could be right.
The veteran for his old people.
And who wins it all? Who wins the game?
I think Gary will see the North Division win. South will give him a battle, but like you guys said, there's just a lot of good bats on that North lineup that the South Division are going to have to deal with. And I see the North winning. I think it's going to be close. But it's going to be 6-5 North.
Well, let's head to the Kevin Lucco Power Rankings, which Connor will get to completely critique after they're done.
All right. The Power Rankings today are brought to you by the Gideon's Restaurant in downtown St. Paul since 1933 and host of a recent baseball summit we'll get into a little later. Number 12, Texas Air Hogs. Number 11, the Gary South Shore Rail Cats. Number 10, Milwaukee Milkmen. Number 9, Lincoln Salt Dogs. Number 8, Sioux Falls Canaries. Number 7, Sioux City Explorers. Number 6, Winnipeg Gold Eyes. Number 5, Kansas City T-Bones. Number 4, the Cleburne Railroaders. Number 3, St. Paul Saints. Number 2, Chicago Dogs. And number 1, Fargo Moorhead.
And Kevin's, or excuse me, and Connor's critique.
I was a little surprised there. Chicago over St. Paul. I understand St. Paul's lost a lot of names, and I could see that. And Chicago's been playing really well as of late, but I don't know, for my money, I still think I have the Saints over the Chicago Dogs. I think the X's are right where you probably should have them, you know, middle of the way. I'd probably give the nod to Winnipeg over the Explorers at the moment. The X's have quite literally been playing about 500 baseball. Last night we were 28-28, and our run differential is exactly zero. So, you know, they've been right there, but... I think that was pretty good. Chicago over St. Paul surprised me a little bit.
Well, I'm a Saints fan, so I try to keep them a little lower to try to keep them hungry.
he's using the philosophy about Adam Walker there, Connor, just to see if he can inspire him. That's what he's looking for. What's going on in the 10th inning stretch, Kevin?
Well, we'll be really intensive come the All-Star game, but it was really a power-packed, heavily Saints-loaded blog last Sunday. Check that out on 10thinningstretch.blogspot.com. And are we working on the blog for this week? And it should be really interesting. Obviously, the Josh Romanski acquisition, I'll be sure to opine on, upon many other things. So check it out. I'll have that out on Sunday night.
Minor League Sports Report, we're just keeping up with where we're at, and we'll have a lot of All-Star Game stuff over the next few days leading into that there. So, Kevin, give us your final thought for the week.
Okay. Right now, it's, you know, we're going to do the good part first, but the Saints having a day game in the middle of the series, and there's teams that probably wonder, why don't you give them a getaway day? Well, there's a lot of group sales that go on, and the groups kind of dictate when you want to play because they're groups that can only come out during the day. But what it provided was last night with Kansas City in town, Dan Vaughn, myself, Bill Tyler, who's known in the independent circles as the man behind the American Association of BaseballFan.com and the old NLFan.com, and the father of Mark Hamburger, Steve Hamburger, we all got together at the Gideon's in downtown St. Paul, had dinner, and talked baseball for a few hours and had a few drinks. And it's a really good time. It was fun to sit down and hang out with baseball people, talk baseball and life in general. But to get there, St. Paul and their infinite wisdom, when you got a lot of things going on in lower town St. Paul, when do you want to have road construction?
To St. Paul right at that time. That's the thinking of the council, I would gather.
Yeah, apparently that's their logic, because right now there's a lot of the street is torn up right around the ballpark, and it's a hassle for fans trying to get to games and people walking to the ballpark. I mean, the other day I saw, like, there's a big hole in the ground with just some little plastic fencing around it, and there's a little girl unsupervised by a stoplight. She could have just walked over the hole and fell right in. So just careless thinking, I think, by St. Paul. Just get the stuff done early in the spring or late in the fall when there's not so much going on. It's just, to me, it's not a good look for your city.
I'm 100% my final thought. I'm behind you on that one. Connor, before we give you a final thought for today's episode, I just want to point out that you have already become the longest running show in this week in the association, almost at an hour and 40 minutes. So you are the man. We just want to point that out right now, Connor.
I'll be honest. I listened to the one you did with Jack Michaels and heard he had broke the record. So it was my goal here today to break his record. So I'm happy that I was able to get that done.
Awesome.
We don't have a sponsor, otherwise they'd give you a gift.
Exactly. Any final thoughts for us, stuff that's going on with you, Connor, you want to tell us about?
Let's see. Final thought, I can't really think of any except for the fact that, in the terms of the world, Tom Brady is the In-N-Out of burgers, or In-N-Out is the burgers of Tom, compared to Tom Brady, and every other quarterback is Whataburger. So just to, just to dig a few more knives into the side of both Steve Montgomery and Brad Allred.
And Kevin and I would specifically like to honor the lovely fiance of Connor, who on his one day off in probably 3 weeks allowed him to join us for the show tonight. So thank you very much. And do we have a wedding date?
October 5th.
Oh, awesome.
Coming up fast.
That is awesome. And where are you getting married?
Right here in Windside, Nebraska, and then the reception's in Wayne. So, come on by if you want. It'll be fun.
We got invited, Kevin. That's what I heard.
Yeah.
I've been wanting to turn out a good party. So.
I know. And I'm just thinking we could host This Week in the Association live at the wedding. How about that?
There you go.
All right. Well, we want to thank Connor Ryan for joining us this week. For Kevin Lucco, I am Rob Panier, and we will see you next time on This Week in the Association.